Listen on Demand, brought to you by 680 News.
So, Mr. Bickell, welcome to Toronto.
Thank you.
And tell me a little bit about this wonderful play that you're involved in, Visiting Mr. Green. I love the premise. Tell me a little bit about it in your own words.
Well, it's basically a two-character play, this old man is being visited by this young business executive who, and much to the puzzlement of the old man, who doesn't really remember why the young man should be there, it appears that the young man, they were both involved in a near accident. The young man was driving a little too fast and almost hit the old man. And the judge decreed that as punishment, the young man should visit the old man once a week and help him with whatever needs to be done. The old man doesn't want help. The old man neglects himself because his wife died recently and he can't really function by himself. But he also doesn't want to have any people around him. And so there are two characters, both of whom have an agenda that they are shut out of society either by decision that they made themselves or by the society itself. The young man, because, and it comes out in the play, of course, because he's gay and is being ostracized by his family. So he's basically in the closet.
Right.
And the old man, somehow in the course of this play, these two strangers, people who are strangers to each other, manage to fulfill a need in the other. The old man becomes the kind of a father that the young man doesn't have in his own father. And the old man finds a reason to function again, to live again, to make peace with his own loss.
Your career is amazing in terms of its breadth into the music, film, TV. Was that on purpose you did that, or is it just where your interest took
you? Well, you know, sometimes there are certain performers who have not just one talent, but more than one, and even maybe a multiplicity of talents. And there's no rule that says that you have to do one thing and one thing only.
You originated the Newport Music Festival.
Folk Festival,
Folk
yes.
Festival. Tell me about some of the performers early on at the Newport Folk Festival. Who would have been there?
Well, of course, Joan Baez was there, and Dylan was there before he was the Dylan that we know today. Anybody who was anybody was there. The Weavers with Pete Seeger you name them, they were all there in one way or another. Some of them just played one song at the so-called New Folks afternoon.
Yeah.
And later became famous.
Now, you were the first person other than Bob Dylan to perform one of his songs. Which song was that?
Blowing in the Wind.
And you heard him do it, and then you went on to do it, or how did that
happen?
Yeah,
actually, he came to my apartment in New York and sang it to me and left me the text on a coffee table.
And where did you first perform it?
I did it in a concert or two. I was touring at the time, and then I did it at Newport.
Fantastic. And are you still performing music these days?
Sure, absolutely. We have a quartet as well, which performs all over. We performed in Poland and in Mexico and in Paris and in Canada as well. Last summer we did one concert in Toronto. We taught, each one of us, and performed in the Laurentian Mountains at Claire's Canada, and then we did a concert in Montreal.
Fantastic. Excellent.
Yes.
Now, stage work, film work, your career just has all kinds of points to it. Tell me about, one of my favorite films of all time, The African Queen, Bogey and Hepburn, and
well,
you.
Yeah, well, that was the first one I was ever in.
That was your first film?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was in a play at the time in the West End of London, and John Huston came to see it twice, in fact. And he was just about to do The African Queen, and so he asked me to be in it.
And what was it like being on that set with him, a fabulous director?
Well, it was not just a fabulous director, but, you know, between Hepburn, who was this wonderful sort of New England nobility, and Bogey, who was a down-to-earth person with a sense of humor that the Brits never knew how to react to. And he, frankly, I learned from him an immense amount. I would sit in the makeup room next to him, and he would mumble his lines, and the script girl would read the other parts. And he would almost say them without inflection, without any intensity at all. Half an hour later, he gets on the set and he gives a full-blown performance. And it was an uncanny experience.
Wow. So it's almost like he was saving it for the camera, right?
Yeah, well, that was his way.
Yeah. Well, and Offset, was he affable or was he easy to get along with?
Oh, yeah, I played a lot of chess with him.
Ah, very good. Wow, that must have been really interesting.
How did you meet Laurence Olivier?
I did roles in small theaters, and I was lucky enough. I was seen by Michael Redgrave in one play, and then it turns out he had dinner with Olivier the next night, and he told him about me. And the next thing I got was an invitation to come and see Olivier.
And you ended up doing Streetcar Named Desire?
That's right.
Fantastic. Seems to me the way you were describing your method of approaching a role would really jive with Olivier, who has seemed to have a lot coming from within as well.
Ah, but you see, Olivier, that's deceiving. Mm. Olivier placed a lot of importance on externals. He was fussy about makeup, about false noses and false hair and pieces and stuff like that. But he had an uncanny ability as an actor to analyze. That's what made him a great actor, not just a good one. But that's something that he had, and it's not something that's taught in England too much, or at least at the time that I learned.
Right. Interesting. Now, you performed Fiddler on the Roof more than 2,100 times, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, when did you first do the production?
You'll be surprised. The first time I did Fiddler was in Las Vegas.
Really?
Yes.
Well. And now, how come you've done it so many times? What's the story of you
because
and the Fiddler?
They kept asking me.
Which is good for an actor, right?
That's right.
What do you think it is that people love about that production?
Because it turns out that it's sort of, while it is constrained in terms of its ethnicity, and it's set in a place in Eastern Europe that very few people know about, a character like that becomes every man and becomes universally accepted and understood, despite the fact that, you know, these people have not known Jews and Russians and pogroms and stuff like that, but people have known what it means when children don't follow the tradition of their fathers. People know what it means to be persecuted and hounded from your homes. I mean, those are universal themes.
Mm, absolutely. Well, I'm a bit of a Trekkie, too, so I was delighted when you did the role of Worf's father on Star
Trek.
Yes. Now, you've done a lot of TV, but how did you come to audition for that particular role?
I know. They asked me.
Really, eh? Yeah, fantastic. Did you enjoy it, or are you not a science
fiction? Oh, no, I did enjoy it. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought it was very nice. I mean, he was such a great character on the show, and to finally meet his parents, that was fantastic. Mm. Fantastic episode. Any TV work coming up for you?
No, but I'm just looking at a film script.
Ah, fantastic. Great. Well, we can talk more about that another time. Theodore Bickel, thank you so much. Wonderful speaking with you, and I can't wait to see you in the new play, Visiting Mr. Green.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.